Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algy, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
Hey, folks, this is episode number 369, I believe, of the Ages of Rock podcast. And we have a very special guest this week, Jock Bartley from the band Firefall. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. Rocking out still. And, you know, it's amazing I still get to do this, but we're making good songs and people love hearing the old Firefall songs. And life is good. How about you guys?
We're doing pretty good here. Real quick, I want to thank Kenny Wilkerson for getting us in touch with each other. So, yeah, Kenny's been on, he's from Nova Rex, and he's been on our show several times. And I think someone in your band, or a current member of your band, maybe.
John Bissaha, probably.
That's it. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, so thank you.
Bissaha.
Mr. Bissaha has been on our show as well.
Cool.
So you have recently released a new album.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, Firefall's first album came out in 1976. And Rick Roberts and Larry Burnett wrote all of our songs. And we had three or four really great albums that went gold and platinum. And we got to tour with all the best bands of the 70s. And, you know, it was really a charmed thing. And who knew that in the 80s, where, you know, kind of dropped off in music, the music genres that people were listening to and buying, you know, changed. And then the 90s came and classic rock came out in the late 80s or 90s, because people of our age group, you know, got sick of what was on the radio and they wanted to listen back to the late 60s and 70s with all the great bands from those times. And Firefall is really fortunate, and it's just wonderful to have played a small role in that, in the 70s music. But anyway, I guess where I was going with that was that unbelievable that here in 2024, we're making another new album, and, you know, and it's doing really well. It's been out for about 6 months, and it's a really great concept album. And we're doing other new recordings that'll be out later in the year. So, yay.
That's great. You can't keep an old guy down, can you?
Sometimes.
Well, the good thing is, too, Jock, I just was looking on YouTube today and caught there's a recording of a concert that was done back in November in Colorado somewhere, I think. Hmm. And it's playing all the hits and everything. And I'll tell you what, you guys still, you got it. Sound great musician wise, ship. And unlike a lot of the bands have been around since the 70s, the vocals, you know, a lot of times don't quite make it, and you guys are still sounding great.
Well, you know, that's interesting, because the number one thing Firefall's got going with for us from the 70s was how great the songs were and how memorable the songwriting was. And then of course the singing. We were always a really great vocal band. And yeah, the older you get, you know, I can think of four or five bands that have lead singers that can barely sing now. And, you know, I'm the lead guitar player in Firefall, and I sing. But a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, Mark Andes, the bass player from Firefall and Spirit and JoJo Gunn and Heart, and, you know, Mark retired. And our sax flute player, the late, great David Muse from Clearwater, he died from cancer about 3 years ago. And suddenly I needed to get a new vocalist and a new bass player, and was turned on to John Bissaha, who's also the lead singer of The Babies now. And fortunately for Firefall, they're not working hardly at all. And John Bissaha and Steven Weinmeister are my two lead vocalists, and they are just fantastic. They are so good. And not only this new album, Friends and Family, shows that, but the one before that, the vocals, and particularly live, I think we're as good live as we've been in 30 or 40 years with this lineup.
Yeah, well, after watching that video, I do agree on that. I think it, and I was watching you guys too on stage. You guys are having fun. You see the looks in everybody's faces. Everybody is having a good time. You're laughing. You know, nobody looks like they're not having fun on stage, and that's right. Really good.
And you know that actually sometimes that by itself goes across more to a crowd who's paid a lot of money to come see you play, is you're having fun up there and you enjoy this. And for me, I know how damn lucky I am to have, well, 30 years ago, I realized once the dust settled 35 years ago or something, that I pretty much own the name of the band and could keep it going if I wanted to. And the songs were so good that I thought, well, let's keep it going. And that was the right choice because, you know, we still hear today from people in the audience or at a meet and greet or something about, oh, you don't know how much your song Just Remember I Love You means to my husband and I, or You Are the Woman, or some of these other songs. And, you know, and when you play live, you got to be able to pull off your vocals. And unfortunately, there are some 70s rock bands who are sporting the lead singer, by gosh, and he can't sing that great anymore. So we're really fortunate. And I got two young bloods. Well, they're, you know, they're in the 50s and 60s, but man, they sing great. And it was such a pleasure making an album with them.
So how did you find, so when you were going through the path of getting this going again and stuff like that, how did you find those guys? Did you have a connection with them somehow?
Well, actually, I've had a Firefall band going since the original band broke up in about 1981. And I've been through some different lead vocalists and different drummers and whatever. But the band that we had in the past 5 years had three original guys from Firefall, myself, wow, on lead guitar, Mark Andes and David Muse, and Mark retired and David quit the band. Steve Weinmeister, lead guitar player, singer extraordinaire, he was in the band for about 25 years in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. And then he left, but he came back. And then we found John Bisaha, our manager, also does work with John and his other band, The Babies. And, you know, The Babies were great, you know, and, you know, John Waite, you know, and John Bisaha is such a great singer that, you know, and I know that you got to be up there really pulling it off and doing well on stage because, you know, tickets are so, you know, expensive these days. And, you know, people expect to hear the songs that they want to hear sounding like they're supposed to. And me as leader of the band, I've kept that a tight rein on that for a long, long time.
Yeah, I think that's by good. That video, I could tell that. Is, like I said, you got a really good, like even your guitar sounded, you got a really good clean type, but still distorted. You know, because I saw you were using, you had a kind of a bluish Paul Reed Smith you were playing. And then you had it going through, looked like a larger Fender. I don't know which one model
or
it was.
Or smaller. Yeah. You know, I was really lucky, you know, in the 70s in Boulder, Colorado, as I was developing my sound and playing in other bands. And I fell into replacing Tommy Bolin in the Boulder band Zephyr, you know, and then out of the blue, I fell into Graham Parsons, Emmylou Harris, and the Fallen Angels, and which was strange because I wasn't a country picker at all. And of course, you know, James Burton played all those great country licks on the Graham Parsons albums, you know, but I developed my own style and sound, and it's really kind of a melodic answer the vocal back, Don't step on anybody's toes. And the thing about Lee guitars, and, you know, in the past, a way too big of a percentage of Lee guitar players never realized that it was not just showing off how fast you could play or, hey, how about this lick or whatever, is that pretty much everything that you play, whether it's a lick or a solo or a rhythm guitar part, the song comes first, and your part you're playing needs to further and enhance that song. And I learned from a really famous jazz guitar player named Johnny Smith, who was a Gibson guitar endorsee and played with Bing Crosby and Stan Getz and had 15 albums out in the 50s, 40s and 50s. And he drilled into me about tasteful playing and being a good soloist isn't so much about what you play, but really what you don't play and the spaces you leave.
Right. I just saw recently an interview with Dave Gilmore, and he was talking about, somebody said, you know, you never play fast, or you play, you know, a lot of notes and stuff like it. He says, if you want to hear me play faster, just speed the record up. You know, that's what I thought, because he, you know, if you really think about it, he never, he's like you, well, no. Too, very tasteful. You don't need to play right. A million notes. You need to play the right 10 notes, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. And a lot of times one note or two or three notes says more to an audience and a listener than, you know, 20 notes just showing off how fast you are, you know. And, you know, that I was really fortunate to have, you know, a really good classical and jazz upbringing, you know. And then, you know, 1964 happened in February, and the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan, and it was like, uh-oh, I want to be in a rock band, you know. And, you know, millions of teenagers, you know, started growing their hair and listened to the Beatles. And the cool thing for me was I had already played electric guitar for 5 or 6 years when, you know, Ed Sullivan and the Beatles hit. So I had a leg up on everybody a little bit.
That's good. Yeah, they, what was I going to say? Darn it.
Beatles were the best.
Yeah. Yes, they were. They were. So you got, so I noticed you're not playing a lot of, you don't have a lot of effects either. I noticed your pedal board is only very small. You're not using a lot of, you know, maybe a little delay here, a little that.
But, I got two pedals, really. Two pedals and a tuner. I've got a distortion sustain pedal, and I've got an echo pedal. Right. And the truth is, and you've heard, you know, people talk about bone tone. Really, the tone of your guitar comes from your left hand and your fingers and how you pick. And you know, and I can play through a rental amp every night and still sound like that. And I'm fortunate that, you know, that it happens, because, you know, a lot of times. Yeah. Well, anyway, it's just really good. And I love that Fender. It was I have a 1958 Cherry Sunburst Les Paul, a Gibson Les Paul that for many, many decades was worth more than my house. But now, now that the real estate market's gone totally nuts, you know, it's kind of back to just being a really amazing vintage guitar. But, you know, you know, with that and my Fender Super Reverb, you know, and you can hit a note and just sustain and it grows and, you know, when you got tone like that, the fewer notes you really have to play.
Exactly. Alan, you're going to raise, would you say anything?
I was just shaking my head.
I got you. No, so one thing too. Go ahead. Go ahead, Bill.
So Jock, do you have any of your sons or daughters or whatever that you've influenced that are playing?
Yeah, my son is a great drummer. He's a graphic designer. I asked him, I'm a painter and I'm, you know, kind of pursuing an art career and, you know, do acrylic paintings and pastels and stuff. But our manager said, you know, Jock, your paintings are great. Why don't you do the album cover for this new Friends and Family album? And I went, you know, let me think about that. And I asked my son, who's, you know, in his late 30s right now, if he'd do it. And it took him about 15, 20 minutes to come up with this Firefall cover from friends and family. And that's the Yosemite Firefall there. He did it with AI. And I went, that is fantastic. And, you know, and part of the Firefall groove was being the artist in the band back in the original band in 1975 and 76. I ended up always talking to the art director about the covers. And I wanted, I don't know if you guys know who Maxfield Parrish is, who's an illustrator from the late 1800s into about 1940. Amazing. And his paintings and his illustrations are these blue, vibrant sunsets, and just, he's great. I wanted our first album cover to be like a Maxfield Parrish, because at that time, as everybody knows, you know, you'd walk into a record store and there'd be 150 new records on the wall. And I wanted people to go visually right to our record and go, what is this? You know, and I wanted to paint the cover too, but, you know, the art director said, great idea for Firefall, kid. Thanks. We'll take it from here. And they did, the record label did our first album cover, which is spectacular artwork. It's blue and the comet and everything. So Firefall's been, you know, pretty fated from the start with our history and how we got together, and we had a really brilliant 3 or 4 or 5 years, and God, I've been making my living off it for the last 40 years.
Hey, most of us wish we were on that boat.
So yeah, I would venture to guess that most of the artists that come out in the last 10 years wish they were on that boat.
You know, and it's not only is it being at the right place at the right time, which most people that have been successful or have record deals or have hit songs on the radio, there's a certain amount of not so much luck, but karma and fate and good fortune. But, you know, for me to be in Boulder right when, you know, Rick Roberts and I, after, you know, Rick Roberts replaced Gram Parsons in the Flying Burrito Brothers. And in fact, it was Rick Roberts and Chris Hillman who discovered Emmylou Harris. And then suddenly I fall into Gram Parsons and Emmylou Harris's touring band. And I meet Rick Roberts in New York City. And we went, you live in Boulder? I live in Boulder too. We should get together. And it took us about 3 or 4 months to get together back in Boulder. And by that time, Gram Parsons had died, unfortunately. And Rick and I got together and it was feeling great from the start. Mark Andes, who was in the Vanguard from L.A., who got, you know, rock stars that were sick of living in L.A. that moved to the mountains above Boulder, Colorado, that the number of those musicians included Stephen Stills, Chris Hillman, Richie Furey, Joe Walsh, Dan Fogelberg, Carl Wilson from the Beach Boys. All of these rock stars moved to Boulder, you know, where I was living and trying to get in a band. And suddenly I met Rick Roberts and Mark Andes got in it, and suddenly it felt like a band. And this is a cool story, gentlemen. Rick Roberts said, I know this guy, Larry Burnett, in Washington, D.C., who writes great songs and sings great. You want to hear a song of his? And Mark and I go, yeah, sure. This was, of course, a decade before cassette tapes had been invented. So he puts on this reel-to-reel tape, and the first song we hear of Larry's is Cinderella. And we went, oh, my God, get him out here. And the end of this story is, on our first week of Firefall, we didn't have a name for the band yet. We didn't have any gigs. We had Rick Roberts and Larry Burnett as singer-songwriters, Mark Andes on bass, me on lead guitar. It was about a month or two before Michael Clark from the Byrds, the drummer, joined the band, came out and joined the band. But on our first week of rehearsal, we had 25 original songs to work out from Rick and Larry. Unheard of. Wow. You know, because when you form a band, you don't know what you're going to sound like or, hey, what are we going to play? And we had all of those songs to work out. And the songs were so good that about 4 or 5 of them, a year and a half later, when we got our first record deal, they were on. We learned those in the first week of practice. Mexico, It Doesn't Matter, Cinderella, Living Ain't Living. It was like, boy, the songs were the key to Firefall, I think. And then the synergy of the musicians, you know, my lead playing, David Muse's flute and sax, etc.
No, it you know, it works out. And like I said, it's all about the song, you know. And absolutely, and it helped you guys too, you know, the fact of the resurgence of the so-called yacht rock. I mean, you see a list of like the top 20, 30, you know, yacht rock songs. You guys are always in there. I mean, those songs are they have remained and stayed staples of that genre.
Right. It's interesting to be on Facebook and see somebody's post that it gets into this huge heated argument about
yacht or not.
That's not a yacht rock. This, you know, oh God, that's not yacht rock. It's like, well, you guys argue about that. I just, you know, it is nice having a few songs that people think are yacht rock. And I'll tell you what, we've been doing a lot of touring in, you know, with the Yacht Rock All-Stars or something. And there'll be four or five bands that go out and play their hits. And then that's it. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what they call yacht rock now really was AM gold in the 70s.
Right.
You know, so.
Yep. Right. Yeah. Well, you know, in the 70s, a lot of people that are younger than us don't realize that it was AM radio and FM radio.
Yep.
And Firefall was lucky to have a You Are the Woman or a Just Remember I Love You that was top 10 in AM radio. In fact, You Are the Woman got to be number one on Billboard on the easy listening charts. But we also had Mexico, Cinderella, a lot of these songs that were on FM radio. So we had the best both of both worlds, FM and AM.
That's awesome. Cool.
And you know, like I say, you guys are a unique band in a way that not every band, I know that I can only name a handful, like Marshall Tucker and a few things like that, you know, who incorporate a flute in your music, right. You know, in a rock song. And it's great. I mean, it sounds awesome. Like I said, just watching that video of you guys the other day, your instrumentals during the songs, you know, you're making the songs longer or whatever, doing your like little solo stuff. Right. But the band itself, I mean, you guys are tight.
Well, while really, we're talking about
really good musicians, the soloist, the Who solo, myself and now Jim Waddell on sax and flute and keyboards, you know, we get the biggest standing ovation every night after his flute solo in Strange Way, which is our next to last song. And I mean, crowds go nuts because, you know, there, I won't name any names, but there are 70s bands that pretty much go up and play the song like it is on the record and they don't stretch out and they never take long solos, or the guitar players are always playing the exact identical, you know, licks from the 70s. And to me, you got to do that. And believe me, as a band leader, I've kept You Are the Woman and Cinderella and Just Remember I Love You sounding like they're supposed to, you know, and I played the solo on You Are the Woman, you know, for 40 years without changing it at all, you know, but we also can stretch out and go new places and let the musicianship take over a little bit. And, you know, and audiences just love that.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm sorry, Alan, you were getting ready to say something. We jumped all over.
I'm just going to jump back to the new album.
Sure.
Yay.
You say the album is called Friends and Family. What inspired the name of the album and what inspired you to actually record the album?
This is really great. Our manager, Lynn Fico, out in L.A., called Mark Andes and I a couple of years ago and said, you know, the original guys in Firefall, you guys played in a lot of other famous bands, too, like the Byrds, Flying Burrito Brothers, Spirit, JoJo Gunn, Dan Fogelberg, Graham Parsons, Emmy Lou Harris. In my case, Lynn said, why don't you do a new album of just their material? And I went, that's a great idea. But you know what? And I had the light bulb went on immediately. I said, let's expand that idea. Because in 1976, when our first album came out and hit it so big and the album went gold within 3 months and we were touring with everybody, I said, we toured around with and got to be pretty good friends with a lot of bands like the Doobie Brothers, Loggins of Messina, Fleetwood Mac, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Marshall Tucker, Chicago, all these bands. Let's do. Yeah, baby. Love it. That Doobie Brothers was the one that we toured with Michael McDonald and Skunk Baxter and sometimes the Memphis Horns. I said, well, let's pick a song from those bands too, Doobie Brothers, Fleetwood Mac, et cetera, and put it on this album. And he said, that's a great idea. As soon as he said that, I started realizing how much of a responsibility that is, because what we did on this record, Friends and Family, was we did it lovingly, respectfully, and honored not only those bands and the songs that they did and got hits with, like the Doobie Brothers or Fleetwood Mac or Loggins or Messina, but also we were honoring the late 60s and the mid 70s, which is a decade or more of music that will never happen again. Never, ever will there be another 70s for the variety and quality of albums being made by bands who felt free to do what they wanted to do, you know? And in the 80s, everything changed and, you know, record labels got the iron fist out and they started dictating what you should sound like. And we don't like that one song or whatever. But in the 70s, you know, the Eagles, Dan Fogelberg, Little River Band, Little Feet, the band with Robbie Robertson and Levon Helm. We got to open for the band for their last tour. Wow. And for me, one of my best memories, I wish I had a damn camera then, was sitting after we'd play our little 35 or 40 minute set, the band would come on, and this was in their last year. And we toured with them their last tour, and then they went out to California and made the movie The Last Waltz. So they were on that was the end for them. Every night I would sit behind the curtain, probably 10 or 12 feet away from Levon Helm playing drums and singing, and there's Garth Hudson, and there's the band being one of the best American groups ever, you know. Wow. So Firefall hit it at a great time. We had really wonderful songs, and this new Friends and Family album was an opportunity for me and Firefall and what we sound like to really do justice to and try to play songs by other groups in a really respectful and loving manner. And it was great. And some of the songs were an easy pick, like Angry Eyes by Loggins and Messina. Bingo, that was easy. But then, you know, for instance, I kept thinking, well, we should do a heart song, but what heart song should Firefall do? You know, it's the Wilson sisters, and John Bisaha, who was going to sing it, said, I could sing the heck out of What About Love. And I went, really? And he's good friends with Howard Leese from Heart. I'm good friends with Howard Leese from Heart. And Howard's been playing with Bad Company for the last 10 years, and now he's retired too. I asked Howard if he wanted to play the guitar solo on our version of What About Love. And he said, well, thank you. That's great. And, you know, and it's just, you know, and I have to add too, sorry to dominate the conversation so much here. As a lead guitar player, for instance, I knew on certain songs, like Part of the Plan by Dan Fogelberg, that's the guitar solo. Dan played it perfectly. And for me, and I'm a really good soloist, but for me to play something else, so I just learned Dan's solo and did him justice. And it sounds different, but it's the same. You know, same thing with Randy California's guitar solo on I Got a Line on You by Spirit. You know, I thought, I got to play that solo as Randy wrote it and played it, because that's great. Now, on the other hand, I mean, Lynyrd Skynyrd had three of the hottest lead guitar players going back then. I didn't even really listen to what their record did and what licks they played. I just had them in my heart and went out there and played ballsy guitar and to our version of Simple Man. And it really sounds great. And I'm really happy, but I really had them in my gut and my heart when I was playing that. Same thing with on Can't You See by Marshall Tucker. I got to know Toy Caldwell, you know, and it was an honor for me to play lead guitar and not copy what he played, but kind of play it kind of like Toy played it. And what an honor to be able to be in a position to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking through the thing right now. The set list are on this. It's really good. I'm going to have to pick that up. definitely going to.
Oh, you haven't heard it yet?
No, I have not heard this yet.
Oh my God.
I've got a lot. I've got a bunch of the older albums. I was just going through when Alan said you were coming on. I didn't realize you had this out.
Oh,
so you'll sell what? Another album now. But
it was so great. And I'll tell you what, and we did, for instance, you know, I didn't know we got to tour with Fleetwood Mac during the Rumors tour, the White Album first. We toured with them a lot. And by the time when they made Rumors, which was the biggest album in the world by far at that time in right. what, 77 or 78, they used us as their opening act for a lot of their shows. And I thought, well, we got to do a Fleetwood Mac song, but what song are we going to do? You know, because some of those songs are kind of sacrosanct. It would be a blasphemy to do a certain song, you know, even if you did it great, you know. And suddenly popped into my brain World Turning by Lindsey Buckingham, one of my favorite Lindsey Buckingham songs ever.
Right.
So it was really cool selecting the songs and then recording them and kind of just letting it happen and you know, thinking, oh, great, what does this song need? Oh, let's put a little bit of this in there. As the producer of the record, too, and I hope you'll agree with me when you hear the songs, and you can go and download them on iTunes and on Amazon now, Friends and Family, Firefall, or Simple Man, Firefall, or Long Train Running by the Doobie Brothers, Firefall. I really kept the production really simple and didn't do too much. Yeah, there's plenty of vocals and, you know, and I don't mind as a guitar player from the 70s making a rhythm track that has 12 guitars on it to sound like one great one, you know, but we didn't overdo it and we didn't add a lot of strings and we didn't add fancy frills. I wanted the songs and the melody and the singers and the musicianship behind them to really carry the record. And it's a really simply produced album and I'm really proud of it.
So Chuck, what does touring look like for you guys now then? So will you tour this record?
We have been. Okay. And touring now, thank God, is like we're weekend warriors at best. You know, back in the day in the 70s, you know, I couldn't have, you know, not only could I not have a dog or a cat, but I couldn't have any plants in my apartment because I was gone for 2.5 months or 2 weeks, yeah, you know, 3 weeks or 4 weeks. We go out and play one or two shows and fly in and fly out. And I'm in my 70s now, and I understand why Mark Andy's retired, because it sucks being on the road and being in, you know, the aftermath of the pandemic and going through airports and sitting in planes with, you know, kids coughing and sneezing and, you know, that part of it sucks. But the hour or 90 minutes or however long we get to play on stage in front of a crowd of people that really appreciate those songs, that's the reason I'm still doing it for sure.
Cool.
That's great. I'm just trying to find out if you're going to be coming close to us. Yeah, we'll have in
to,
Indiana.
Yeah, we'll have to figure out if you're going to be around the Indiana area.
You know, I know we're going to travel a fair amount in 2024. I'm keeping it kind of a little sparse, though. And John just had some shoulder surgery. So we, after working, I was gone from my house in Colorado 10 out of 11 weekends in the fall, from about wow. August till November. And I was ready to, you know, go out and, you know, live in a cabin somewhere and not see anybody. So it's really great to have 6 weeks off and not doing anything. We're traveling some. We're still fortunate enough to play with bands like Little River Band or occasionally REO Speedwagon or Atlanta Rhythm Section or Orleans or Ambrosia or Pure Prairie League. I love playing these shows out on the road, and it doesn't matter where it's at, whether it's Indiana or Florida or Washington State, you know, and there's three or four bands on the bill and you go out and play a 30 or 40 minute set, 45 minute set, and play the hits. And then Atlanta Rhythm Section comes on and does the same thing with their hits, you know, and it's just so neat to be able to, you know, really play great 70 songs for these very appreciative audiences. Yeah, and that, now to have these songs, you know, like a Doobie Brothers song or a Lynyrd Skynyrd song on our new Friends and Family album, that just kind of throws it into a whole nother little area for me.
Yeah, that you're hitting right in the 70s and 80s wheelhouse that I really, really enjoy listening to.
Yeah. Have you heard the Friends and Family album, Larry?
Larry is the guy on Bewitched. Oh. I'm Alan.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know what? I've got this guy, Larry, calling me and giving me a voicemail, and I saw Larry. I know that. Alan, Jesus. We talked for 10 minutes before, so please.
It's okay,
please,
Chuck. We call him all kinds of things.
Yeah, that's a nice
Alan,
thing.
He's... Have you heard Friends and Family?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, man. And, you know, even if you just go out and listen to Simple Man or Part of the Plan, or we did, you know, let's see, what are some of the other songs we did? In the Heart of the Night by Poco. We used to tour all the time with Rusty Young and
love that song.
And Paul Cotton and, you know, R.I.P. those guys.
Let's see, I'm trying to see if it's on.
Well, before we get out of here, let our listeners and our viewers know how to find you on the internet.
Okay. Firefall has a Facebook page called Firefall, I guess. Our website is firefallofficial.com, and you can buy not only the Friends and Family album on there, but some of our older Best of or Greatest Hits albums on Rhino Records too, and, you know, and read the bios and see what's happening. I'll just say, you know, one more time, I know how fortunate and lucky I am to be a really good guitar player in a band that has songs like that and still can go out on the road and, you know, travel around and make a living on, knock on wood, you know, 'cause great guitar players are not a dime a dozen these days, but there's millions and tens of thousands of us out there. And it was just the way Rick Roberts, you know, the songs he wrote and me playing on his songs. Maybe I'll end with my Mexico story. I've told Rick Roberts that, you know, in the decades since our heyday, that I was born to play on his song Mexico. And when we went down to Criteria Studios in Miami, Florida, make our first album in the winter of 1975. It came out in 1976. You know, the Bee Gees were down the hall at Criteria Studios and Stephen Stills was down there. And we were a brand new band, Firefall, who, you know, nobody'd heard of us, or, you know, they might have known Michael Clark or Mark Andes or something. Long story short, when it came time for me to do the solo on Rick's song Mexico, and I'd played that song for 2 years live and just smoked it, you know, not right brain, not even thinking about what I was going to play, just play it. I went out and warmed up. Producer said, "You ready to go?" I went, "Yeah." And they started the song and I'm listening on headphones. And I ended up playing a one take pass of 3.5 minutes. And I had never played with the mariachi horn section that we had added a few days earlier than that. So I told the producer, I didn't know what I was going to do at all during the horn section. Keep what I did. Let's see if I can beat that. And he said, "No, come on in." I went, "No, really. I think I can play just that section a little better. Let me try it." And he went, "No, come on in." I went, "No." I take my guitar off. I walk into the control room to give him a piece of my mind. And there, having listened to me misplay Mexico and a one take burning solo, was my guitar hero, Eric Clapton, watching me play. And I just crumbled and turned into Jackie Gleason, humina, humina, humina. And he stood up and shook my hand and said, "Keen playing, man." And he walked out. And the producer said, "Now, what do you want to do again?" And I went,
"Nothing."
And the one thing, the end of the story, of course, is it's a good thing I didn't know Eric Clapton was there in the control room, because I wouldn't have been able to play anything.
I understand that completely.
Oh, man. So Firefall's really been blessed. And here we are talking to you three guys from Indiana, you know, about our new album. You know, I was telling to Alan, you know, before we got on the air, I am so blessed and humbled by the fact that I can make a new Firefall record in 2023, and we're working on the 2024 version, you know, here, however, 40 plus years past our first album. Unbelievable.
A lot of people can't say that.
Nope. Yeah.
And do it well. Yeah,
well, you guys are great, and it's been really fun talking to you, and thanks for having me on.
Oh, well, we appreciate you coming on. Thanks again, Kenny Wilkerson, for connecting us. Visit firefallofficial.com and find their social media links. Visit agesofrock.com and find our social media links and past episodes. And until the next time, peace out.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.